Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening.
No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello, I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Hutton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of the first of three races in Italy. And what an absolute belter of a race that was. That was exactly what we needed. I mentioned on the podcast last week, I did a 180, didn't I? And I said, I'm going to use some reverse psychology. And I'm going to say we're expecting a really boring, mundane Italian Grand Prix in the hope that we got what we got. Even I didn't hope that we would get a race like that. That was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, well done to you, because your reverse psychology is definitely working. We need that for the rest of the season. Ferrari needs some reverse psychology from you as well, and so does Valtteri Bottas. We'll get onto that in a minute. But of course, Pierre Gasly, his first win in Formula One. He's been on the podium before with AlphaTauri, as I'm told I'm supposed to call it now. Yeah, great race. More woes for Ferrari and some interesting battles in the midfield, which could have panned out one way or the other and didn't quite work. I was thinking of the Renaults there, really, who looked as though they were strong all weekend, and then when it came to the race, didn't really maximise their potential. But yeah, an amazing race, which was unusual in many ways, especially the closed pit lane, which I suppose we'll get onto. But one race that you have to say that Hamilton dominated the weekend, and even though he finished down in seventh place, he kind of dominated the race, if you know what I mean, because his pure pace, even after his penalty, was amazing. And compared to his teammate, just unbelievable.
Yeah, and of course, Bottas was moaning, wasn't he, about the engine settings and saying this car's undrivable, I can't drive it, you know, since they had the party mode taken off them. But, you know, you look at what Hamilton did in that race, like you say, he was at the back of the pack. He made his way back up to another seventh. And, you know, Bottas needs to get his stuff together, because you can't sit, I think he was like fifth or sixth, wasn't he? Just sat there basically moaning for the whole race, saying, oh, I think I've got a puncture. Oh, I think I've got damage. Oh, the car's undrivable. And then Hamilton did what Hamilton did. And that's the difference straight away there. And, you know, I think you mentioned this on Twitter over the last couple of days that, you know, pick almost any other driver on the grid would do a better job at the moment. Feels very much like Bottas has just kind of started the season, done very well, first race, won it. And then from then on, it's just gone, oh, I can't beat Hamilton. I don't know what to do. And he's just mentally given up already, isn't he? And he's just plodding along as a second driver. And it's actually quite sad to see, because he is in the best car out there. You know, Hamilton is an incredible driver. He's going to go ahead and break all the records. That's without a doubt. But Bottas, you know, Rosberg proved it's doable. You can get into Hamilton's head and it's doable. If you're a good enough driver in that car, you can win a world championship. And Bottas is just not proving that at the moment.
No, he's not. And it really annoyed me. In fact, I was angry with Bottas. I know he was talking about overheating issues and saying that the car wasn't drivable. But, you know, Hamilton had those same issues. His engineer was onto him when he was making his way back through the pack, saying short shift because they were worried about overheating and things. So he had the same equipment and he finished 10 seconds behind Bottas, who was unable to do anything about Norris in front of him. It made me quite angry. I just thought, you know, another young gun deserves a shot in that Mercedes, because I think you said to me on text during the race, you said, he's just another Grosjean for me. And I thought, oh, that's the curse of Scott Hughes. That means he's now dead in his eyes.
No, you're right. It's just, you know, you get one shot, don't you, in Formula One. You get one shot to prove you're a superstar driver. You get one shot to prove that you should be in a top team. And then when you make it to a top team, you get one shot. And you know, Bottas has had all those things. He's had a lot of second goes, I think. You know, they've re-signed him again and again and again. I wonder how much of that is Hamilton saying, listen, you know, this guy's doing well. He's a good number two driver. Let's sign him up. Because Hamilton deep down knows that he can't beat him. So, you know, Hamilton's sitting pretty at the front going, this is great. I've got a teammate that can't really beat me mentally or physically. I've got a teammate that will regularly come second, though, so he can get the points for the team. We can win the constructors' title and I can have a rear gunner. And it just feels to me that Hamilton's very happy with that setup. And I think that may be why Mercedes have re-signed him. Of course, the other option was Ocon this year. And he's not performing great either, is he? He's struggling in the Renault.
Yeah, it looks as though he's taking his time to get used to the car. But you see, Danny Ric did that last season, didn't he? He was a bit lackluster at the start. And I think maybe the Renault car is a difficult one to drive. Although Danny Ric said this weekend they found a setup sweet spot, which is why their race result, I think, was probably a bit disappointing in their eyes. I mean, the disappointing thing about Hamilton and Bottas this season is that already, you know, we've got 9 races to go and Hamilton's nailed on as champion for a 7th time. Bottas is not going to challenge him now and may even finish 3rd in the Drivers' Championship if Max Verstappen gets his act together. Disappointing weekend for Red Bull. And I wanted to mention Red Bull, actually, which we'll come on to later. But let's go through the race in some kind of order. First dramatic point was Sebastian Vettel and his brakes failure. Never a good thing to hear on a radio, brake line's gone. I remember when I was doing the British Pro Kart Championships, every single driver briefing, they said, if you have a brakes failure, do not come into the pits, because they were worried about you coming into the pits, not being able to stop and taking out half your team. So that was a dramatic moment, straight through runoff in turn one, hit the polystyrene barriers, very dramatic, and then, you know, limped home. Then we had Leclerc, who came off of the Parabolica. And again, proving just how difficult that Ferrari is to drive, because it was the slightest twitch at the rear end at about 200 miles an hour, and it just flicked him straight off into the barrier, which must be a concern for them moving forward, that not only do they have no real engine power, but they still have a car that doesn't handle well in fast or slow corners.
Yeah, and it's always quite disturbing, isn't it, when you see an accident of that kind of speed as well. I mean, all accidents are not great in Formula One, but when you see one where they hit the tyres side on and that kind of speed, it's always that kind of moment of, oh, well, that didn't look good. And you could tell on the radio immediately he was very out of breath and he'd obviously winded himself. It was, you know, a hell of an accident. But like you say, very skittish, very sort of on the edge all the time. And, you know, you've got a four-time world champion in Sebastian Vettel that can't qualify, you know, can't get past the first qualifying session. He can't qualify in the top 10. You know, neither of the drivers can at the moment. That Ferrari just seems to be going backwards and backwards and backwards every race. But you're right, I think even Binotto has come out and said, you know, I've questioned whether I'm good enough to be running this team. But it, by the sounds of it, Ferrari are behind him and they're saying, listen, we're not going to sort this out anytime soon. It's going to be at least 18 months. We're waiting for the rule changes. But, you know, if you've got a team principal who's starting to question whether he's good enough to be running a team, you're not in a good place, are you?
Well, we had Ross Brawn at the weekend who said Ferrari need consistency. So Ross was kind of saying, don't change the upper management of Ferrari. Leave it as it is and they'll eventually find their way. And he should know. I mean, he led Ferrari to all those victories under Michael Schumacher. Now, before Leclerc went off, of course, Magnussen pulled up just shy of the pit lane entrance, and that gave us the bizarre situation where everyone decided that they should probably pit, but of course the pit lane was closed. And I've never seen the sign, which is like the red bordered light panel with the yellow X, which denotes pit entry closed. It caught Lewis Hamilton and Giovinazzi out. So they came into the pits when effectively the pit lane was closed, and that's why they got penalties. But apparently, according to Michael Massey, who's the race director, it was in the race director's notes, and it is every single weekend. If we close the pit lane, those two final panels on the Parabolica will show an X to show the pit lane's closed. Hamilton didn't notice them, and he had a point, actually, because he's looking at the apex on that turn. He's looking towards the right-hand side. He's not looking towards the left at 200 miles an hour where those panels are situated. And as he said, there's no light on the pit lane entrance to denote whether it's open or not. So quite a difficult one to see. And me and you have both heard this audio, which wasn't released on the world feed, of Hamilton questioning, well, virtually everything under the red flag conditions, about why he'd got a penalty, about where the light panels were, and about what his team were going to do about it. He sounded a little bit like a spoilt child who was just about holding it together before having an expletive rant. You know what I mean? But you can understand his frustration, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think you can watch that on YouTube. You can hear that entire audio that I think I sent it to you, but it's on YouTube now, and it's actually a fascinating listen to hear Lewis Hamilton kind of discussing everything you've just said, you know, over the radio with his engineers. And so why, you know, why wasn't there a red light on the pit lane? Why this? Why that? Why have we got a penalty? What's happening here? How are we going to take the penalty? Shouldn't we do this first? And all that kind of stuff is fascinating to listen to. But when I was doing the MR2 racing, it was at Silverstone, actually, and a car went off. And it had a very similar paint scheme to a car that my mate was driving at the time. And I was driving on the right-hand side of the track. I'd slowed right down because it was yellow flags, obviously. Slowed right down. I was on the right-hand side of the track and I was looking over to see if it was my mate or not. I was trying to work out what car it was because it had gone right back into the barriers. So I was sort of trying to see the number of the car. In doing so, I passed a car on my left-hand side, very, very, you know, just slightly past him. after the race, I didn't even realize I'd done this. After the race, I got called into the stewards and they said, can we have your camera footage from inside your car? You've been reported as passing on a yellow. And I was like, really? What? You know, and I got very confused, but it was exactly the same scenario. I'm looking the other direction. I'm looking over at the right to see whether that was my mate that had gone off on the, in that car, in that gravel trap. And on the left-hand side, a car had slowed down enough that I passed them just by going the same speed, if that makes sense. So I can see how it's done. But then at the same time, you know, if these things are in the notes, and again, how does a Formula One team miss that? You know, these engineers must have been aware of that. Why were they not on the radio saying to Hamilton, stay out, stay out? You know, we've heard these radio calls before, you know, box, 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 followed by stay out, stay out, stay out. You know, we've heard these mix-up messages before. Surely someone on the pit wall had a heads up that that was, you know, a closed pit lane and to keep the driver out. But it just seemed the perfect storm of him coming in. And I'll be honest with you, when it happened, I was like, well, that's a shame for Hamilton. But my God, this really does spice this race up. And it was brilliant from there on in, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was some interesting chatter I saw from Toto Wolff after the race. He said it was a strategist in the UK that made the call. But he was the first one to notice it, apparently. But that was already as Hamilton was in or approaching the pit lane before, you know, would have been no time to tell him to stay out. But it was a UK strategist that noticed it. Apparently, the notification about the pit lane being closed was on page 3 of the timing screen. So they may have missed it on the pit wall because they've been looking at something completely different. But the interesting thing for me is those panels on the left-hand side, I was watching the race in the comfort of my own home on a 4K TV, 55-inch, if you don't mind. Thank you, Curry. I'm watching it, and I couldn't see them. And Hamilton's low down in the car, doing close to 200 miles an hour with all the vibrations that come. He's wearing, obviously, a helmet with a very narrow visor. You know, I just think they need to make that clearer moving forward, and perhaps we'll see some changes, even at Mugello this weekend, with a more obvious pit lane open or closed type message that the drivers can easily see as they approach that sort of pit lane. So I kind of felt for Hamilton, but you're right. It spiced the race up brilliantly. I thought it was great to see Hamilton working his way through the pack. When Mercedes said, we think he can finish sixth, I was like, whoa, really? He was 30 seconds off the pack after the restart. It was just unbelievable. But of course, Pierre Gasly was faultless. He's been threatening this all season, Pierre Gasly. He's just had some really good races and he's just had his head down. He's been getting on with it. And you think of all the woes he went through this time last year with the Red Bull demotion. He's just done really well.
Yeah, and what a headache now for Red Bull because, you know, they've demoted one driver, Gasly. They've put him back in the sister team. They've promoted a driver that was driving better in the sister team, Albon. Albon has since been a bit rubbish this year. I mean, he was great last year, but this year he's been very off the boil and not great at all. And then Gasly's going to win a race for the sister team. So Red Bull are now looking, going, you know, what, you know, do we swap them back? Do we give them till the end of the season? Do we swap them again next year? Do we not swap them? Like, that's a real headache for Red Bull now, isn't it?
I saw some really interesting photographs and a big Twitter debate going on over the weekend. Apparently, Helmut Marko has said that Albon is driving a different car to Max Verstappen. And that's why they're not particularly worried about Albon's race pace and qualifying pace at the moment. And it was backed up with some Red Bull fans on Twitter who were showing photographs of completely different end plates and rear wing structures on both of those Red Bull cars. And it looks as though Albon has been put in a position where he is effectively the test driver for Max Verstappen during the season. So the car for next year is being developed by Albon as Verstappen is getting the upgrades and Albon isn't. And that makes it quite interesting. So maybe they realise that Albon is better than he actually is performing at the moment because he's in substantially different equipment. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he was great last year, wasn't he? I'm still a big fan of Albon. I think the way he finished, you know, when he got in the Red Bull last year, the way he finished that season was just tremendous. And again, you know, we said it about Gasly. Was it all too quick too soon? Did they move him to the upper team too quickly? Did they demote him too quickly? You know, and here we are. But we're in an era now where sister teams are outperforming the main manufacturer teams. You've got Alfa Romeo and Haas that are on a par, if not better than the Ferrari, which is bananas. You've got, you know, the Alfa Tauri doing better than the Red Bull team. It's absolutely crazy. It's been a brilliant season. I think, you know, nobody expected this. We hoped to get a couple of races at the start of the year when the COVID thing happened. We thought, you know, we may not see any races this year. We may get a few later on. And then, you know, they've put together this phenomenal season that we said last week on the podcast. And it's just been a great season so far. There's been a couple of boring races in the middle. But, you know, this race was exactly what Formula One needed. I also, I need to point this out now on the podcast because every week on the podcast, I make ridiculous predictions that never come true and I get mocked for my rubbish predictions. I text you over the weekend And I said, Gasly, Saints, Stroll. Not sure of the order, but that's your top three. That was the top three. And at the end, I texted in, I saying, why can't I predict this on the podcast?
You did. You know, your reverse psychology and your prediction of the race result. I mean, halfway through the race, admittedly. But, you know, you were bang on. You really were. Good race for the McLarens. Norris, I think, unlucky to not get on the podium. Perez, you know, I could have won the race, to be honest. No, not Perez. Stroll could have won the race, but he had a terrible restart. Loads of wheel spin at the restart. I think he was passed by two or three other cars. So really, Stroll should have won it. But, you know, you can't take anything away from Gasly. It was a brilliant job.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
Right, we're going to look forward to Mugello this weekend, which is basically Ferrari's home race and their 1,000th Grand Prix, and it's not looking good so far. First, though, let's get some stats from the Italian Grand Prix with our stat master, Nicky from At Lights Out. Fascinating stuff and some really good stats to come out of the weekend just gone.
Gasly becomes F1's 109th winner. McLaren lead a race for the first time in 6 years, and none of the big teams finish in the top three for the first time since 2012. Here are some of the top stats from an eventful 2020 Italian Grand Prix. For the first time since 1996, Formula One has a French winner. Pierre Gasly took the nation's first win since Olivier Panis won for Ligier at the 1996 Monaco Grand Prix. It was the first time a French driver won at Monza since Alain Prost did so in 1989, the first time a French driver won for an Italian team since Jean Alesi won for Ferrari at the 1995 Canadian Grand Prix, and the first time that the French national anthem has played on the F1 podium since Renault won the 2008 Japanese Grand Prix. Prior to this weekend, the Red Bull Junior team had not scored at Monza since 2013. Gasly took the team's second victory, 12 years after Sebastian Vettel won at the same circuit for Toro Rosso, making this the sixth longest gap between two wins for a constructor. The team are the first to take their first two victories at the same circuit, since BRM took their first two wins at Zandvoort in the 1959 and 1962 Dutch races. AlphaTauri are the sixth team to have won with Honda Power, and this was the first race since the 2013 Australian Grand Prix not to be won by Mercedes, Ferrari or Red Bull. On his way to scoring McLaren's first podium at Monza since Lewis Hamilton won the 2012 Italian Grand Prix, Carlos Sainz became the first McLaren driver to lead a race since Jenson Button led a single lap of the 2014 Hungarian Grand Prix. Sainz is only the second Spanish driver after Fernando Alonso to have taken multiple podium finishes in Formula One. Lance Stroll finished in third place, recording the first podium finish for a Canadian driver at Monza since Gilles Villeneuve finished as runner-up in 1979. Strangely, Stroll has finished on the podium in every race in which he has competed in where there has been a red flag. His other podium finish came at the red-flagged 2017 Azerbaijan Grand Prix, a race in which he similarly finished third, having started eighth. Stroll gave the Silverstone-based team their first podium under their Racing Point guys, and with AlphaTauri also finishing in the top three, this was the first Formula One race in which two new team names have appeared on the podium since the 1950 Monaco Grand Prix, when Ferrari and Maserati took their first podium finishes. The 2020 Italian Grand Prix is also the first time since the 2012 Hungarian Grand Prix that no Mercedes, Ferrari or Red Bull drivers appeared in the top three. And finally, it wouldn't be a 2020 race weekend without Lewis Hamilton breaking a few records. This weekend, he took pole position with the fastest lap in Formula One history, equaled Michael Schumacher's record for the most point-scoring appearances, joined Schumacher as only the second driver to have set the fastest lap of a race on 50 occasions, and equaled Nick Heidfeld as the driver to have had the most consecutive classified finishes in Formula One.
Thank you, Nicky. Nice one. You can follow him across the race weekends. Like Rick said, at Lights Out is where his fantastic Twitter page is. He's got all the links to his blogs and stuff and some brilliant facts. Every weekend I'd go through his Twitter page, and every weekend I'm like, how on earth has he come up with these facts? Like, how do you even work that out? It's like, you know, this is the 17th time a German driver has changed their shoes and gone for a wee before a Grand Prix. I'm like, how does he even know these? There's some unbelievable stats that you can follow over the weekend. But nice one, Nicky. At Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. There was the news this week as well of course, the Renault team going to be rebranding next year. I believe it's pronounced Alpine, isn't it? The Alpine Formula One team as of next year. And they're going to go in the French colours as well. So it's the return of the bit of blue as well, which is, of course, synonymous with Alonso winning his world titles. The car was blue and yellow back then, wasn't it? So it's going to be red, white and blue. And it's, yeah, getting back to blue. Alpine Formula One team, or Alpine Formula One team. Alonso back in the car. I said it last week on the podcast. I'm excited about this because I feel like Renault are slowly getting somewhere. And for the first time in his career, Alonso may have timed a move brilliantly.
Yeah, like I said, I thought Renault must have felt disappointed with the race result this weekend because they were very strong in practice and qualifying. And Danny Ric is definitely outperforming Ocon, who I think is struggling with that car. We've seen, you know, that AlphaTauri can do amazing things when they're given the right set of circumstances, certainly under Pierre Gasly. So the midfield battle this year, as we predicted, you know, at the start of the season, is the most fascinating one. You know, barring the problems that Hamilton had with a penalty, he would have easily won that race just a couple of days ago, don't forget. But of course, it's those sort of things that add the spice and the drama. And like you said, it's so good for Formula One to have those results occasionally. And that's why it's even more disappointing for Bottas, because, you know, Hamilton is not going to be in that position many times in a season where either he makes a mistake or he gets a penalty because him or his team made a mistake. Bottas should be there chomping on the bit and capitalising on every single error from his teammate. And, of course, we just didn't see that on Sunday. So we go into Mugello. Is it Mugello or Mugello?
Mugello, I think I say. Mugello. Mugello. Mugello.
Some of the
it's
older,
a bit more Italian, isn't it?
Some of
Mugello.
The Mugello. My ice cream, Mugello. some of the older drivers will have driven this circuit because they tested here in Formula One back in 2012. It's a very twisty circuit. There's a nice long straight in there. Presumably, there should be plenty of overtaking opportunities. It is really Ferrari's home circuit. They own the track, I think. It's their 1,000th Grand Prix this weekend. And whoa, they have some serious issues going into their 1,000th Grand Prix, don't they? I mean, if they can't get out of Q1 in this weekend, then really, I mean, I don't know where they go next, Scott, do you?
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is, you know, it's not just Vettel. You can't just say, well, Vettel's got bored. Vettel knows he's leaving or he's been binned, so he's taking his foot off the gas, literally, because Leclerc is having the same problems as well, you know. So it's both of the drivers. It's obviously a car issue. What's interesting this weekend as well, when the AlphaTauri won, that is the first non-Mercedes, Ferrari or Red Bull to win a race in the hybrid era. Full stop. And the other interesting thing I saw this weekend, the Formula 2 this year have had 10 different winners.
Yeah.
Gasly was the 9th different winner in Formula 1 in the entire 8 years of the hybrid era. Wow. So there goes to show the difference between Formula 1 and Formula 2. They've had 10 winners this year. F1 has had 9 winners in the last 8 years. So, you know, these rule changes are coming in. Mercedes are going to be dominant this year. I think Lewis has already nailed the title. I'll be amazed if he doesn't win his 7th title this year. I'll be amazed if he doesn't win his 8th title next year with Bottas, you know, off form and Hamilton so on form. Then there's the rule change. And then hopefully, you know, fingers crossed for us, is a big mix up. And, you know, we see some crazy different teams. How nice would it be to see a Williams versus a McLaren versus a Alpine F1? You know, fighting it out for pole and Ferrari and Mercedes and Red Bull nowhere near, for example, just mixing it all completely up again. It's exciting to think what 2021 could bring and 2022.
Yeah, they were talking after the restart on Sunday, they were talking, well, this now shows that reverse grid racing is the way forward because it's mixed it up so nicely. I know the teams are a little bit against it, but it would be quite nice to see maybe two or three races next season if we have a normal regular season next year, where we have a reverse grid qualifying shootout to decide the starting positions in the race. I don't know. It was certainly nice to see the restart with many of the big cars out of position.
Yeah, I mean, they've done this in the British touring cars for years, haven't they? And it's this great thing if you get somebody to pick one of the ball, you know, the top seven qualify, someone puts their hand in a bag, they pull out a number between one and seven, say it's number four, you know, they flip the grid around so four becomes one and one becomes four. And it's a very unique way of doing it. You never quite know where you're going to end up. You know, you can qualify seventh and all of a sudden be on pole. You can qualify on pole and all of a sudden be down in seventh. You know, it's a great way of mixing stuff up. And the ballast thing, of course, they do in British touring cars, you know, where cars get given some ballast to give them a bit of a disadvantage if they're out front or whatever. It's just clever ways of keeping the racing alive, I think. And it's something, although Formula One is a technical masterpiece and it's, you know, the pinnacle of technology, the pinnacle of engineering, the pinnacle of driving, I do feel like we need a few of these artificial things added in to, you know, to whether that be a reverse grid, ballast, bit of both. You know, we spoke before, I mean, this is completely undoable in terms of sponsorship and logistics, but someone said once, why don't they move the drivers? Each team, you know, each driver moves to a different team each race. It would be fascinating, wouldn't it? It'd be fascinating to see Hamilton in a Williams, Hamilton driving a Ferrari at the moment, Hamilton in a Red Bull. You know, it'd just be fascinating to see how good or bad these drivers are. Each driver getting a go in the best car across the season. You know, you put Verstappen in a Mercedes, how fast is he? You put Vettel in a Mercedes, how fast can he go in a decent car? You know, it'd just be fascinating to see. It's never going to happen because of the sponsorship and all that, but I do think we need to add a few artificial things in just to keep the racing really spicy.
You're going to want sprinklers on the circuits next.
I'm like, what's his name? Bernie Eccleston. I'll be trying to buy F1 next and sign them all up to some dodgy deals.
Now, we've come into lots of fire for our predictions in the past, but what are you thinking for this weekend?
I think, sadly, it's going to be a bit more of the same again. I think Mercedes are going to dominate. I mean, we need to talk about as well the qualifying. You know, the cars were just, you know, what was going on there where they were all kind of piling up and everyone was on the radio kicking off saying there's going to be an accident. And, you know, the FIA needs to sort something out there with the qualifying as well because that's getting silly. But unfortunately, I think it's going to be the Mercedes up front. I think the Racing Point will be in it. The Renault will be in it. The McLaren will be in it. It'll be a very similar story. I think it's another fairly fast track, isn't it? And I think the same people are going to struggle. I think Ferrari are going to struggle again. I just hope that there is some rain or some drama and we get a little bit of a mixed up grid. But I fear we're going to be back to Hamilton winning, Bottas second or third, Verstappen in the other seat.
So you've dropped the reverse psychology after just 1 week.
Well, I feel like it will. No, because I am saying it's going to be a boring race, aren't I? So that's what I did last week. Yeah, okay. And it turned out to be the opposite thing. So, okay. But I do think it will be a very boring race. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
All right. Well, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy a new circuit for Formula One to be racing on this weekend. And we'll be here next week to review it all before we take a short break in the calendar, which has been thick and fast so far and produced some amazing races and some interesting results. Have a good week. We'll see you next time.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.